Everybody, how you doing? Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the program. Glad you could make it. Come on in, pull up a camp stool, sit down, take a load off, relax. Well, okay, you can't relax. But join us for a while anyway if you want to. Stick around for the whole 3 hours. First of all, big thank you from Bob Kincaid and the group at Head On Radio Network. Apparently you all really responded last night and today. And apparently the voting goes on for another day over there, but you have really put Bob Kincaid way out in front. Thank you. He appreciates it, and I appreciate it, the fact that I can make a request like that and listeners respond. That's really cool. So thanks to everybody who went to headonradionetwork.com and then followed the links and voted. This is a really important event that he will be attending and streaming now. And you can get all the information at democracyforamerica.com. That's the old Howard Dean organization, or still Howard Dean, or I guess he founded it. But anyway, thanks to everybody who participated, okay? I was looking over the stuff that I have on the stack here in front of me for the program tonight. And, you know, furiously digging through this pile of stuff, saying, okay, there's got to be something here that is not this depressing. But good God. Starting early on the program tonight, we're going to have our missive from today from Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent. That is a real vein opener, if you know what I mean. The blog that I wrote today at MikeMalloy.com has to do with David Swanson publicizing this press release, 200 organizations that are demanding, is that the right word, suggesting, insisting that Eric Holder appoint a special prosecutor and go after these sons of bitches who have completely just train wrecked the United States. And meanwhile, Cheney is still out there, isn't he? He's, oh, God, this guy. Anyway. Also, something from Menachem Begin from years ago, where Begin said that he didn't want nor did he ever expect any country to acknowledge Israel's right to exist. And a report out there on, video. Now this report was released first in March, but it was immediately subsumed by mainstream media because it's too horrific about, child sodomy tapes from Abu Ghraib with the mothers watching. So I don't know what to tell you tonight. I really would understand if you want to go do something else. You know, we don't create these topics, and I guess I could avoid them, but what we're dealing with here is a key issue of whether or not this country is going to survive as a struggling democratic republic that, if it ever comes out of the ether, will move more and more toward democratic socialism, or if we are what we appear to be, a corrupt, failed state run by corporatists who are just bound and determined to flush it all away. So I don't know. This is a bizarre situation, isn't it?
Miss California gets to keep her crown.
Yeah,
that's some happy news.
That was the tone setter today. CNN carried a. I couldn't believe it. Where was I coming from? I don't know. The John. I looked up on CNN today, and there is Donald Trump. And this is a guy who's not aging very well, is he? There's Donald Trump, and CNN has their live Chiron or font, whatever you call it these days, up there. So you know you're watching a real-time event. And I don't know where he is, L.A. someplace. And there is Carey Prejean. Has anyone ever gotten on your nerves quicker than this young woman? Oh, my God. There she is giving a talk about her grandfather fighting in the Battle of the Bulge, having something to do with her right to stand half bare-ass naked in front of people because she's a Christian and Jesus whispered in her ear to strike the gaze or something. Something. I mean, it was just insane stuff. And I'm looking, I'm saying, what? And there's Donald Trump saying, well, Carey Prejean is going to keep her crown. And that was an applause line, I guess. And he paused and no applause. I couldn't believe what I'm looking at. I turned to Kathy, who had already turned her face away. And I said, what the, you know, heck is, Molly was still in school. What the heck is going on here? And Kathy just, I don't know, she started sobbing uncontrollably, something about, where do we live? Where do we live? Where do we live? And then, now that, you expect that from a cable news network that has 24 hours a day to fill up. But then tonight, on ABC News, on NBC News, there it was again. It's been that kind of a day.
Yeah, it was especially bizarre to see Brian Williams covering it tonight on network. And I thought, whoa, no, come on. I mean, Fox, sure. And I kept thinking, is Entertainment Tonight on early?
Oh, God.
Next, we'll be getting the American Idol results from, Bob Schieffer.
Okay, yeah. A new report. You may be interested. This is from here, from this next story, it all goes downhill. So stick around for this one. If you want to bail, it's okay. You have permission. I'll give you a hall pass and you can cut out early today or tonight. But a new report released by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. How's that? OECD. Sounds like, I don't know, some kind of a learning disability. But a new report released by the OECD shows that happiness levels are highest in Northern European countries. Denmark, Finland, and the Netherlands, rated at the top of the list, ranking first, second, and third, respectively. Denmark, Finland, and the Netherlands. Us? The U.S.? Well, we didn't make the top 10. We really didn't. We were not in the top 10. But we do rank among the highest for obesity and child poverty. Americans spend less than half the amount of time eating as the French, but at three times the obesity rate. That's because you people won't drink wine. I keep telling you to. Simon Chappelle, editor of the report, said in an interview with NPR, quote, this tells us something about slow food, I think, end quote. Well, it tells us more than that, Simon. The report also showed the United States has the lowest mean age for women when they first give birth, 25.1 years. The United States still ranks among the highest for child poverty rates, with one in five children here living in poverty. This was only exceeded in Poland, Mexico, and Turkey. Poland, Mexico, Turkey, the United States. There you are, folks, the top four for child poverty. The report looked at subjective well-being, defined as life satisfaction. No objective, standards here. They asked people, did people feel like their lives were dominated by positive experiences and feelings or negative ones? To answer that question, OECD used data from a Gallup World Poll conducted in 140 countries around the world last year. The poll asked respondents whether they had experienced six different forms of positive or negative feelings within the last day. Some sample questions were like, did you enjoy something you did yesterday? Were you proud of something you did yesterday? Did you learn something yesterday? Were you treated with respect yesterday? The average score was 62.4. So why did the Northern European countries come out looking so good? Well, overall economic health played a powerful role, says Mr. Chappell, senior economist from the OECD, which put together the report. But it wasn't wealth alone that brought the greatest degree of happiness. Norway has the highest gross domestic product per capita in the world, 98,000 dollars per person, yet it ranked ninth, not first. On the other hand, New Zealand's happiness level is 76.7 out of 100 on the OECD list, but its 2009 GDP per capita is just 30 grand. So there was something else that made people happy. Stick around for just a couple of minutes, and I'll tell you what it was.
It's Good News Week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky. It's Good News Week. Someone's found a way to give the rotting dead the will to live, go on and never die. Have you heard the news? What did it say? Who's won that race? What's the weather like today? What's the weather like today? It's Good News Week.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour, so caught my eye today, this report, new report released by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, talking about happiness levels in various countries around the globe. The highest are in Northern Europe, European countries, Denmark, Finland, and the Netherlands rated at the top of the list. We didn't make the top 10 in happiness, but we're certainly up there where it concerns child poverty and disease and diabetes and so on and so forth. Just by coincidence, I'm sure all it is coincidence, the happiest countries are those that have as a form of government democratic socialism or social democracy, if the word socialism makes your knees start to rattle. The social democracies are the countries with the highest level of individual happiness. That's based on subjective reporting, people saying, here's how I feel, this is what I think about, this is what I plan for my children, what my children plan for me. Anyway, wealth alone doesn't bring the greatest degree of happiness, even though some of these countries were really up there in the lead with GDP per capita. Norway has the highest GDP per capita, yet it ranked ninth, not first. New Zealand has a GDP of $30,000 a year. Norway's was $98,000. And New Zealand ranks way up there in terms of how people feel about their lives. Now, what is it that's going on here? Well, you're way ahead of me on this, you know, before I even get to it. According to a 2005 editorial published in the British Medical Journal and authored by Dr. Tony Delamothe, research done in Mexico, Ghana, Sweden, the U.S., and the U.K. shows that individuals may get richer during their lifetimes, unless they live under the Bush crime family, but not happier. Here's what it is. Family, social, and community networks that bring joy to one's life. Family, social, and community networks. Now, think about what we're undergoing in this country right now. Capitalism destroys all three of those. Capitalism destroys family. You don't need to have that one explained to you. It absolutely destroys family. American workers, by the way, work longer hours than the people in the social democracies that have a higher level of happiness. But anyway, capitalism destroys family. It destroys social networks for the very simple reason a simple explanation would be the Chinese Communist government continues to persecute, kill, and imprison members of Falun Gong because Falun Gong is a meditative exercise system that centers an individual and within themselves. And of course, the Chai Coms want the centering to be within the government. What is practiced in China, it goes under the name Chinese communism, but it is a form of rapacious capitalism that people in this country, industrialists and corporatists in this country, can only look at and salivate. That's the reason they send all the factories over there. Hello! And the third thing that capitalism destroys are community networks. Think of one. I know one. Unions. Of course they're going to destroy community networks, because once again, if people organize, the first thing they will do is put a knife, a dagger, into the heart of corporate America. Nobody wants to live in a capitalist system. We're all told that that's what we want. And the way they hook us and convince us is with all the stuff that they put in front of us and then tell us, you need this stuff. Your happiness is predicated on this stuff. Capitalism is the single most destructive force ever created by human beings where it concerns family, community, and social networks. You disagree? Go do some independent research and come back and tell me that you apologize for your disagreement. Go ahead. It'll take you a couple of months, but you can do it. That was the happy story for today. That was the happy story. I get an abundance of emails from people who are laying out their itinerary. 6 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years ago, the emails would say, Malloy, if it gets much worse, and then they segued into, Malloy, it is getting so bad, I'm going to, and then they segued into, I just can't be here anymore, so I'm leaving for, you know, and all these different emails all listed different places. People were struggling where to go. A very quick choice was Canada because it's close. Their culture in a lot of ways is similar to ours, although it's much further advanced than ours. Let's be real here. It is also for good or for ill, depending on your point of view in Canada, has the deep influence of French European flavor. excuse me. Other English-speaking countries were popular to, although Canada is bilingual, but New Zealand, Australia, even some references to South Africa until people realized what they were getting into if they went there. But any place to get away from here. And now what I'm finding, a trickle, a drib and a drab here and there, people who are actually packed, ready to go, and leaving.
Place to go, but when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move. You gotta move. You gotta move. You gotta move, child. You gotta move.
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Okay, here you go. You ready? We will pause here for a little bit of church before we move on to Prairie 2's report. I read from the book. Come out of her, my people, so that you will not share in her sins, so that you will not receive any of her plagues. For her sins are piled up to heaven, and God has remembered her crimes. Give back to her as she has given. Pay her back double for what she has done. Mix her a double portion from her own cup. Give her as much torture and grief as the glory and luxury she gave herself. That's from the book of Revelation. And Roz thought that might be appropriate to our discussion about leaving, or my monologue about leaving the United States. The only problem is the female gender there, huh? That's got to irritate people. And Irish Dave writes, regarding the study on happiness, happiness versus religion, it's almost as if they are inversely proportional. That's very true. Very true. Oh, my. Well, religion is not to make you happy. Religion is to make you fearful and guilty. I don't care what the religion is. That is fearful and guilty. That's about it. From Prairie 2, here we go. You ready? The he calls this a Republican fireball. Prairie 2 writes, the Social Security Board of Trustees has come out today with a report sharply cutting the time until Social Security and Medicare will run out of money. Republicans will be coming out of the woodwork to say, we told you socialist security wouldn't work. You should have put your money into the stock market. Well, okay, you should have put your, you should have invested in real estate. Well, okay, you should have gotten rich like we did on no-bid government contracts. The truth is that Republicans have so hollowed out the economy that we can't support everybody anymore. Millions are homeless and millions more will become homeless, even with the rosiest outlook for the economy. Many elderly live on 3 weeks of food a month, including food bank handouts, and heat is a luxury in a lifestyle that does not have luxuries. The Republican solution for the Social Security problem is to cut benefits. Many college graduates are so saddled with debt that even if they find a job in their field, they may not be able to live anything like a middle-class lifestyle. This can be even worse for the trade school graduates who may go back to be retrained multiple times as their jobs continue to be outsourced. Even airline pilots are not immune from this trap. Once a glamorous and high-paying job, we now learn that new pilots who find themselves working for a commuter airline are paid so little and must repay such huge student loans that the result is that they often net as little as $15,000 a year. When you fly, you often are putting your life in the hands of people who make less than a newly hired burger manufacturing technician. The airlines are no longer attracting the best and the brightest, nor are they plowing the payroll savings back into training either. National Transportation Safety Board testimony about the recent commuter plane crash in New York State showed numerous problems. The flight crew did not appear to have any idea how the de-icing system worked, turning it on too early and leaving it on continuously so that it only kept the mechanism itself ice-free and allowed ice to build up on the rest of the wings. They also appeared unaware that with ice on the plane, that you should turn off the autopilot and determine the true handling characteristics of the plane. They were apparently either not properly trained or not adequately drilled on what procedures to follow to avoid a stall or how to get out of one if it starts. The Republican solution to all our problems is to cut taxes that the rich Republicans pay to zero if necessary, coupled with corporate deregulation, the economic equivalent of retracting the flaps and pulling back on the yoke in a stall. The fireball is not far away. Pray too. Go to his website. Oh, and buy canned goods. Prairie2.com, prairie2.com. Seriously, go to his website and engage him, you know, if you agree or disagree. No? Hell, it's hard for me to get comments at MikeMalloy.com, no matter what. Kathy gets more comments than I do on what she writes. She writes the live blog. I write the other one. We've been talking the past couple of nights, or maybe it was just last night, about the change of command in Afghanistan. The new numero uno dude over there is going to be Lieutenant General Stanley McChrystal. He of special ops, black ops, secret this, quiet that, you know, throat slashings, wires around the neck, pulled taut, that sort of, you know, really, secret kind of stuff. A guy who never existed until George Bush blurted out his name and thanked him for capturing Saddam and murdering the other guy. Anyway, the parents of slain NFL star and former PFC Pat Tillman, The parents of Pat Tillman say senators should scrutinize General McChrystal's role in lying about their son's death before they put him in charge of military operations in Afghanistan. Now, the Associated Press says senators should scrutinize the general's role in mischaracterizing their son's death. You know, I am so sick of the weasel words. I could, you know, somebody has got to change the style book for AP writers, CNN writers, New York Times writers, whoever it is. He didn't mischaracterize. The son of a bitch lied. That's all. He lied. Why is that so hard for people to use the abominable L word? Cheney lied. Bush lied. They all lied. In an interview with the AP today, Tillman's dad, Pat Tillman Sr., accused Lieutenant General Stanley McChrystal of helping falsify the homicide investigation. Helping falsify. That would be an accessory after the fact to murder. Now, excuse me. God damn it! Is he going to get his extra star? Is he going to assume command? Of how many forces are we going to wind up? Obama is sending another 22,000 troops. And this guy McChrystal, who is, by definition, a liar. If he is a liar, he is a cheat. If he is a cheat, he is a sneak. If he is any or all three of those, he does not deserve a command position. Does he? Somebody want to dispute that? You know the number here. Pat Tillman's mother called it, her word, imperative that McChrystal's record be carefully considered before he's confirmed. She is being polite. What she is saying is this miserable son of a bitch lied to us. They even went so far as to award my son a silver star that he didn't deserve. They did all this stuff in order to play on my son's death, and they did it fraudulently, and they did it as a monumental lie. And now this guy is going to be the guy in command in Afghanistan, huh? Okay. Oh, yeah. Pentagon testimony into the investigation later showed that the general suspected that Tillman had died by fratricide. Yeah. Okay. That's called cover your ass, right, General? Huh? Man. Now, regarding the blog I posted today at MikeMalloy.com about 200 organizations, and thanks to David Swanson for getting the word out, 200 organizations that are requesting, insisting, demanding, pleading with Attorney General Eric Holder to begin an investigation into the murderous operations of the Bush crime family over these past 8 years. There is a professor of law at the University of Toledo College of Law, Benjamin Davis, and he said today regarding the so-called suicide of Alibi. Remember we talked about this last night. He was found dead in a prison cell in Libya. Alibi was the one who was tortured to such a degree by the Egyptians that he confessed anything they wanted to hear. And one of the things that they wanted to hear was that there was a link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein in order to try to justify the invasion of Iraq. And Alibi, as we reported yesterday, was found dead in his cell in Libya. I don't know how much attention that's gotten in news media, in the electronic media, but it was listed as a, you know, suicide. A little bit more from Professor Benjamin Davis when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So Professor Benjamin Davis, professor of law at the University of Toledo College of Law, said today, quote, "It's remarkably convenient to torture apologists that Alibi has turned up dead." Now, Alibi, of course, was another witness against the Bush crime family. When they are eventually brought to trial for crimes against humanity and war crimes. But Alibi was at the top of the list of people that had to be murdered, had to be gotten rid of. Oh my God. Because he was the one who was tortured to the point where he provided false information that later was proven to be false by anyone involved. I mean, even the CIA, even the people who tortured him came to the conclusion that he only said what he said because he was being tortured. I mean, come on, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this stuff out. And it was the comments by Colin Powell, who was at the time Secretary of State before the United Nations, about all this crazy stuff going on in Iraq that came from primarily from Alibi. He's now dead. But Professor Davis is a member of the Robert Jackson Steering Committee. You know who Robert Jackson is. That's the Supreme Court Justice who argued as the prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials after World War II. Professor Davis, a member of that steering committee, and this group, the Robert Jackson Steering Committee, helped organize 200 groups to sign a statement released today urging Attorney General Eric Holder, quote, to appoint a nonpartisan independent special counsel to immediately commence a prosecutorial investigation into the most serious alleged crimes of former President George W. Bush, former Vice President Richard B. Cheney, the attorneys formerly employed by the Department of Justice whose memos sought to justify torture, and other former top officials of the Bush administration, end quote. Now, again, the group is named for the former Supreme Court Justice who was the prosecutor at Nuremberg, and Justice Robert Jackson famously said one time, now listen to this, quote, "To initiate a war of aggression is not only an international crime, it is the supreme international crime, differing only from other war crimes in that it contains within itself the accumulated evil of the whole," end quote. Robert Jackson, American Supreme Court Justice, prosecutor at Nuremberg. What he just says in that quote defines forever. I don't care whether they come to trial or not. This is the definition of the Bush crime family. "To initiate a war of aggression, therefore, is not only an international crime, it is the supreme international crime, differing only from other war crimes in that it contains within itself the accumulated evil of the whole." Oh, my God. So, and the Republicans, these vermin, these right-wingers, all over media, all over the dying political party that is the Republican Party, in a constant attack mode to protect and defend not the Constitution, but Dick Cheney and George Bush. This is madness. This is truly just a defining characteristic of a country undergoing a complete schizophrenic break with reality. That's us. Oh, I know you don't want to hear about that, right? It's too depressing. Sure, damn right it's depressing. Out on a Limb, who is one of the diarists at Daily Kos, says, "Darth Cheney has been making the rounds, talking loud, telling us all to be scared because the Obama administration doesn't torture and has shut down illegal wiretaps," which it hasn't. "There's been speculation about what he's up to. Cheney, defending himself from legal action, working on how history will view him. No," writes Out on a Limb, "it's worse. Far worse. Cheney has been secretive and in hiding for most of the Bush administration. Suddenly he's all over the airwaves. He's been out in the open more than at any time since the 2000 election. What's he up to? Remember, he's a political operative. It's all about power and money. He is completely amoral. He cares not a bit about the security of the United States. He cares only about money and power. He's warning us that we are now less safe because Obama no longer tortures people. We are less safe because we have stopped illegally wiretapping our own citizens. What is the reason for these scare tactics? What does he hope to accomplish? Why put himself at risk this way? Because he is, in fact, putting himself at risk because he has committed war crimes and he has admitted to them. There's a good reason. He still has contacts with Halliburton, with KBR, with the terrorists formerly known as Blackwater, with the Saudi royal family, and with the Bin Laden family. They're planning an attack on the United States. And Cheney is in on it. And when it happens, he'll say, "See, I told you so. Obama caused this. It's time for martial law." Why would he do this? To ensure that Obama fails and that Republicans look good again. To reinstill the fear that kept Darth Cheney and his friends in power. To create more contracts for Halliburton. Here's my prediction. Within a year, Out on a Limb writes, there will be a spectacular attack on the United States and Cheney will claim to be a prophet. And will later turn out to have been a co-conspirator. Maybe Cheney and company haven't compromised U.S. intelligence community enough. Maybe these criminals will get caught before they can pull it off. But the bastard looks so smug and cocksure and really seems to be on a mission. I don't really believe that amoral cabal is going to just give up power because there was an election. Honestly, do you? Out on a Limb, writing at Daily Kos. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is just about 7 past the hour. This just in from the New York Times. The state assembly in that state has approved legislation tonight that would make New York the 6th state to allow same-sex marriage. The vote now goes to the state senate, where advocates on both sides of this issue say they will fight to the death. Anyway, the state assembly in New York approved legislation tonight that would make New York the 6th state to allow same-sex marriage. Oh, listen, you can hear traditional marriage collapsing and crumbling. Quick, look out your door. Look across the street where that straight couple lives. Look! Oh, my God, they're going up in flames.
Somebody call Bill O'Reilly and grab a turtle.
You're so bad. All right, this is not a new story, but it's starting to surface again. It was out, and then it disappeared. Cy Hirsch, who I think most of us can trust to the journalist, the investigative journalist, we can trust to tell the truth. We can trust to do the necessary investigative work, kind of like Greg Palast. There are several. Cy Hirsch had at Salon.com an article. I think it first appeared in the New Yorker, but it's starting to recirculate, and that is that after Rumsfeld testified in was it in May of last year about Abu Ghraib? Was it? I think it was. There was talk of more photos and videos in the Pentagon's custody. Remember that? And it immediately disappeared. One of the reasons that conversation, that talk, line of talk disappeared is because these are supposed to be more horrific than anything made public so far. Rumsfeld said, quote, if these are released to the public, obviously it's going to make matters worse, end quote. And since that testimony, the Washington Post has disclosed some new details and images of abuse at the prison. But Seymour Hersh says it all gets much worse. Now, a few weeks back, Hersh gave a speech to the ACLU making the charge that children were sodomized in front of women in the prison. And the Pentagon has video of this. The speech was first reported in a New York Sun newspaper story. The New York Sun, of course, no longer exists. It recently went bankrupt. Other blogs are linking now, or blogs are linking to the video. At the start of the transcript, I don't mean the video that the Pentagon has. I mean the video of Hersh at this ACLU meeting. At the start of the transcript, you can see how Hersh was struggling over what he would say. Now here is here's part of it. Debating about it, some of the worst things that happened you don't know about, okay? Videos, there are women there. Some of you may have read that they were passing letters out, communications out to their men. This is at Abu Ghraib. The women were passing messages out saying, please come and kill me because of what's happened. And basically what happened is that those women who were arrested with young boys, children in cases that have been recorded, the boys were sodomized with the cameras rolling. And the worst above all of that is the soundtrack of the boys screaming that your government now has. The boys are in total terror. This is all going to come out. End quote. What do you suppose is going to happen when those videos are released? And you know they will be. You know that they will be. Do you think we'll be able to, as a society, be able to handle that? Huh? I know Limbaugh will probably love it because every other reference he has about when he really wants to try to embarrass or denigrate somebody or what they had to say, he usually uses the phrase, well, then they, you know, they expect you to bend over and grab your ankles and, you know, then they, that he always makes that reference, which would indicate to me that Limbaugh is very much into sodomizing people. And I use the term in its forced, violent torture sense. I don't equate sexual activity of any sort with any sort of even close to being deviant. How can something be deviant? If humans can do it with each other, then it's not deviant. I mean, it's that simple, isn't it? Unless it is used as a form of torture. And rape is not a deviant form of sexual expression. It is violence. Sodomizing someone is not a form of, in the context, or in the meaning I give to it, is not, in this context, is not a form of pleasurable activity. It is a form of violence. And when Limbaugh talks about it, he uses it in that context, violence. If these tapes are released, and they shall be, they will be, you know they will, of children being sodomized, what do you suppose will happen to us? I don't like to think about that. I really don't. Dar Jamil, writing at Truth Out today, talks about the very topic that was all over the news yesterday and that we talked about extensively last night. And that was in Baghdad yesterday, the U.S. soldier gunning down five fellow soldiers at a stress counseling center. And as we mentioned, the chairman of the U.S. The Joint Chiefs of Staff told reporters at a news conference afterwards, Admiral Mike Mullen, that the shootings occurred in a place where, quote, individuals were seeking help, end quote. Mullen added, quote, it does speak to me, though, about the need for us to redouble our efforts, the concern in terms of dealing with the stress. It also speaks to the issue of multiple deployments, end quote. And as Jamail writes, you know, the shocking story of a soldier killing five of his comrades doesn't come as a surprise. When we consider that our military has for years now been sending troops with untreated post-traumatic stress disorder back into the U.S. occupation of Iraq. And I mentioned this yesterday in my blog. Last summer, Jamail spoke with a Marine named Brian Kassler, who had served in both Iraq and Afghanistan. Kassler suffered from chronic PTSD. He continues to have nightmares. And Kassler gives an account of what he's going through. Also, a Sergeant Christopher Lejeune and a couple others here that I'm going to share with you in a second. We have a break coming up here. But the violence that has been done to our troops, and I'm not talking about being in combat zones where we have no business being. The people who started that, Bush and Cheney, have cut and run, although Cheney continues to pollute the airwaves with his distortions and lies. But Bush, what is Bush doing? He's just happy as a pig in crap, isn't he, huh? Just rolling around someplace. I was a war president. All right, I want you to hear this when we come back. Stay with us.
But we die for good pay. Under the flag of the greenback dollar or the peso down Mexico way. This war's over, might go back to Georgia and settle down quiet some way. I'm most likely.
Up to the flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, writing at Truth Out today, Dar Jamail, in listening to veterans, he provides here a statement by Brian Kassler, a Marine who had served in both Iraq and Afghanistan. This is about these multiple deployments that Rumsfeld ordered and has now become, I guess, embedded in military policy where it concerns Afghanistan and Iraq. some of these soldiers are going over 2, 3, 4, 5 times. I mean, it is crazy. It is insane. And the people who are suffering are our young men, and for the most part, young women too, combat veterans who are forced into these situations. Junior officers are resigning their commissions or not re-upping for the simple reason that they understand their limits. And as officers, they have they can resign their commissions and get out of the military. Soldiers who sign a contract for 6 years don't have that luxury. Brian Kassler, quote, "I'm still on edge 24/7. I have trouble being in social environments. I never thought of myself as suicidal, and I still don't. But for the past few months, there have been points where I was driving, and I would close my eyes for 15 seconds and just think about what it would be like to crash my car into a concrete barrier. That's not me. I never had these thoughts until after I got out of the military. I just don't feel like myself. I was always a hopeless romantic, and now I have relationship problems. The greatest girlfriend in the world, and I know it's not her fault. I just have personal problems I have to work out. There are just so many issues. I'm not at rest, and there are real regrets. I think about the Iraq war way too much. I wish I could think about my family more than I think about Iraq, and it's draining me. I can't focus in class. I can't focus at a job. I was working for a union, and I was picketing for the union, and all I could think of was how to end this war. I cannot attend to things that are outside the realm of ending this war. I saw so many things happening, and I knew they were wrong. I can't speak for everybody, but I think a lot of people have PTSD from regrets about something they did earlier that they now have a problem with. It is immaterial whether you thought it was right or wrong when you did it. All that matters is that now you have a problem with your actions, and there's this inner turmoil. I have this inner turmoil every day. I was indoctrinated into the military spirit and the perpetuation of lies." End quote. Let's agree on one thing. As Jamail says, war, and as a lot of people have said, war is an atrocity. War is bilateral psychosis. War brings nothing but destruction and suffering to everyone involved in it. In this case, whether they be Iraqi civilians or U.S. soldiers occupying Iraq. Now, complicating everything is that the U.S. military has been medicating soldiers before they're redeployed to Iraq in order to keep enough boots on the ground. Think about that for a second, dear heart. An anonymous survey of U.S. troops taken during the fall of 2007, a year and a half ago, used as part of the data in the Army's 5th Mental Health Advisory Team report, found that 12% of combat troops in Iraq and 17% in Afghanistan were on prescription drugs that were mostly antidepressants or sleeping pills. Sergeant Christopher Lejeune has firsthand experience of this sort of treatment. He was diagnosed with depression, and the military doctor he consulted sent him back into the field with the antidepressant Zoloft and an anti-anxiety drug called clonazepam. He says, quote, "For a variety of reasons, it's not easy for soldiers to admit the problem that they're having. And if they do admit it, the only solution they have, the only solution they're offered is pills." End quote. 2 out of 5 suicide victims among troops in Iraq and Afghanistan were on antidepressants. 2 out of 5. It is common for soldiers to have only 2 weeks off between postings to Iraq and Afghanistan by rotation. Indiscriminate use of the so-called stop-loss policy and widespread incidents of extension of deployments have aggravated an already critical situation. On May 9, 2008, the LA Times reported that the number of soldiers held in the Army under the stop-loss program in March 2005 reached a high of nearly 16,000. In August 2008, the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee approved a $500 monthly payment for soldiers whose separations or retirements had been delayed by stop-loss orders since October 2001. Pentagon records expose one conspicuous result of this frantic stop-loss policy since 2003. As reported for USA Today, On May 8th, 2008, over 43,000 troops declared medically unfit for combat in weeks prior to their scheduled departure to Iraq or Afghanistan were sent anyway.
More Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Dar Jamail writing at Truth Out today in the perspective session goes on regarding what I blogged about yesterday, this horror that occurred Monday of a soldier opening fire on his comrades and killing five at a stress clinic at Camp Victory, just outside Baghdad in Iraq. Army psychiatrist Colonel Charles Hogue told Congress in March of last year, 2008, that nearly 30%, almost a third of troops on their third deployment are mental wrecks. Recent research has proved that the year's break that soldiers are currently permitted between combat tours is insufficient time for them to reset and recover from stress before going back into combat. This is madness. Another example, Sergio Kachurgan, back home from his second deployment in Iraq, held a gun in his mouth, trying to muster the courage to pull the trigger. Untreated PTSD and accompanying nightmares and insomnia, heavy substance abuse, several failed attempts at self-medication had taken their toll on him. He was in an apartment he shared with a friend in Texarkana, Texas. He had spent the past few months with his parents, where he was drinking too much and causing too much trouble, breaking things, flipping out, cursing at his parents. The decision to end his life came in early 2007 from a desperate need for relief and to avoid deployment back to Iraq. Although Sergio Kachurgan's military contract had expired, it would have taken more than 6 months for him to be medically discharged from the military, in which period he was sure to be redeployed. A year later, describing his aborted attempt to kill himself, Kachurgan said, quote, I had a .40 caliber in my mouth for a long time, trying to figure out the right thing to do. Should I put an end to the suffering or should I allow it to continue to torment me? Fortunately, I fell asleep and woke up the next morning. My roommate came in and blanking flipped out on me and took the gun away to his parents' house. I stepped out, and with a deep breath of air, I was like, man, this is way too good to just throw away. After that, I decided I had to do something. That's when it sunk in that there's no point running away. I must start dealing with it and do something. And that kind of pushed me up. But, of course, too many vets in that situation don't make that decision. This article goes on, and I would suggest you go to commondreams.org. Commondreams.org. I know a lot of you are familiar with, truthout.org. They're both good sites. Truthout.org. And read this. Unfit for combat. The point, of course, is the damage, the incredible, unbelievable damage that the Bush crime family did to this country is just never ending. What they did to young people in the military and people not so young. You know, the actual causing of the deaths, out-and-out deaths of approaching 5,000 of American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. the literally hundreds of thousands of deaths that the Bush crime family caused in Iraq and Afghanistan that continue. It just continues. We are in the eighth year of a war against the people of Afghanistan. For what? We are in the sixth year, or is it the seventh now, of an invasion and occupation against Iraq. For what? These are war crimes that these people committed. These are against humanity. These are prosecutable actions. They must be prosecuted. They have to be. How do we not do this? How do we let this stand? How do we just say, well, you know, if we prosecute them, it'll just be politics? What? You see, that's what the right wing is pumping out every single day. That's what you hear on right wing radio. Subject comes up. Except to mock the people who are suggesting that accountability is in order from these bastards. And then what the right wingers will say, these media freaks will say, well, you know, they're just trying to get even for Clinton. Well, you know, it's just politics. Well, it was a policy difference, and they want to jail people for a policy difference. Jesus Christ, how many people listen to these freaks day to day, coast to coast, border to border? Go ahead, one of you right-wing bastards, send me an email and tell me again how Rush Limbaugh makes $50 million a day and has 200 million listeners or whatever your garbage is, as if that were to impress me. It's destroying this country is what it's doing. Absolutely. Absolutely. So do you think justice will ever have a chance to surface in any of this? Huh? What they did to set the conditions in Iraq that allowed the raping of children as a form of coercive torture, if that's not redundant, the raping of children, that in Abu Ghraib, we were in control of Abu Ghraib. We were. So there is no way to plead ignorance or to plead, well, I wasn't paying attention or I didn't know people in my command or the contractors were doing this. That can't be done. It's like the Germans after World War II saying, well, I knew nothing about this. I didn't know they were burning people in ovens. I had no idea, which is one of the reasons that the U.S. military forced people in the villages near these death camps to come witness these mass graves and the furnaces, the ovens with partially burned bodies inside, so that anyone who said, I didn't know, could no longer make that statement. But see, we don't know. We have a sanitized media that will spend inordinate amounts of time telling us about Miss California and her breasts, but do not inform us adequately that the Bush administration set up protocols that resulted in the anal rape of children as a method of torturing the people forced to listen to and watch it. That is not the mark of a civilized country. And the same people who want this to go away and pretend it never happened are the same sons of bitches who will tell you that we are a Christian country. And to declare otherwise is not just apostasy, but it is historically incorrect. We are a Christian nation. We anally rape children as a means of torture. We torture people until they die. But we are a Christian nation, you see. I tell you that I have no idea how much stress you wind up dealing with from listening to this program. Maybe nothing. Maybe there is a big enough remove from reality when you're listening to a radio program or online or downloads or whatever, that it just becomes something that is not really, you know, there or not really real. I know that in dealing with these topics, I've got to somehow isolate or attempt to isolate my feelings for children, especially my own, in dealing with these stories. I can't imagine this. I can't imagine. Just like the stories of the news reports, not stories, that makes it sound like it's fantasy or you know, fairy tales. The news reports of men, and it's usually a man who goes berserk, kills his soon-to-be ex-wife anyway. They were in the process of separating or getting a divorce, and then systematically and methodically murders his children, and then either commits suicide or flees. I mean, you know, how do you, I don't know how law enforcement people handle that when they're forced to investigate, and arrest people who do those kinds of crimes if they remain alive. But how do you support, a military establishment that takes young men and women, enlistees, people who sign up, and the right-wing answer is, well, they didn't have to sign the contract, you know, and to that, I'd like to stuff something into these right-wingers' mouths, like maybe a rag and then pour water on it. But, you know, these kids are brought into the military with the promise of, oh, you're going to learn a skill. You're going to wind up with $20,000 for college. Rather than saying, look, this is the goddamn military. We kill people. We smash things. We are not nation builders. We are nation destroyers. That is by definition what a military does. Do you want to come in and kill and destroy? Do you want to see things that will eat at your mind for the rest of your life? Do you want to experience things that when you go back to civilian life, the least little thing will make you commit murder or suicide? This is what happens when you join the military. Do you want to do this? Or have you been watching John Wayne movies and recruitment videos where it's all like some goddamn video game? Is that what you think the military is all about, boy?
They pulled in just behind the bridge. He lays her down. He frowns. Gee, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed the woman there. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows he'd have taken in a plane.
Whoa!
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. You know, I was brought up at a time and a place where respect for the military was just embedded in American life. I was brought up in the days after the end of World War II, when the communist menace was the manufactured communist menace was pushed down the throats of all of us school children. When fear of nuclear annihilation was part of our school day as much as recess was, our little duck and cover drills, you all of a certain age remember those. And arching above all that was the one thing that was protecting us, and that was the might of the United States military. And that might broke down into honor, duty, country. Honor, duty, country. The duty aspect of that is still part of military, current military tradition, but honor and country? Does anyone out there really believe, and I'm certainly not blaming the soldier, the grunt, the people who decide U.S. policy and the use of our military to enforce that policy are the criminals here. They are the ones that, and I'm referring specifically now to the Bush crime family, they are the ones who have so corrupted whatever honorable traditions existed, and they did exist inside the military. Maybe the military operations themselves were criminal. But the individual acts of sacrifice and care and concern and love for the person that you went into combat with and the person whose survival depended on your being able to think beyond your own self. Those acts of courage and honor and decency in horrific situations were so separate from the overall idea of why an army of ours went into combat to begin with. If anyone can find for me anything starting in the 60s with the operations in Vietnam and Central America, anything that speaks to honor, I'd like to know about it. But in the past 8-9 years, when the Bush crime family took over, and almost as though they consciously devised a plan, and possibly they did, because to the last man, every one of these sons of bitches was a complete cop-out and coward where it concerned any sort of military service at all. It was almost as if they had an instinct to hate the military because they could not have lasted for 5 minutes in a military situation. And so they set out to systematically corrupt, destroy, denigrate, pollute the military. And because of this unavoidable chain of command that is required when you are sending people to kill or die or both, the field commanders had to take their orders, plus the fact that, take your orders and do a good job, boys, and you'll get the advancement of rank. You might get another star even. Hell, you might wind up on the Joint Chiefs. So just keep doing what the commanders say, or what the civilian commanders say, because, you know, chain of command, that's the thing that separates us from countries where military overthrows the government every other week. But look what the Bush crime family did. You know, 100 years ago, damn near, Smedley Butler wrote, "War's a racket." It's an absolute racket. And it is. And it's a crime against humanity. But to add to that crime, the additional crime of torture, murder, incinerating children and civilians deliberately, I refuse to believe in the idea of collateral damage. There's no such thing. The Bush crime family put our military in a situation where it had to fight urban warfare. That means civilian dead. That is not collateral damage. That is objective accomplished. That is tactical operations. I just sometimes wonder how we're able to sustain this country. How we're able to do it. I really am. Our economic system is destructive. Our leadership for so long has been just absolutely vile. And regardless of what area you look at, look at business, look at government. You have a bunch of apple polishers in the military who have no problem whatsoever in bombing a village. We have a religious leadership that is so far out on the edge that it's amazing that anybody still will listen to a preacher or a priest. It's astonishing to me. I just wonder sometimes how we're able to hold this together. I guess that's where the hope comes in, right? We have a break here. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is just about 7 past the hour. One more thing that our military affairs correspondent sent me this evening, very quick, and then to your phone calls. Richard Smith is a veteran. Sharon sent this to me. He is one of the founders, I believe, of VoteVets, .com or .org. Richard writes, this is just something that has been running around in my head, so it will be short. Dick Cheney has been making the media rounds lately, explaining how the president has made us less safe with his policies of intelligence gathering. Personally, I think Cheney is displaying a warped sense of American values. In the days after September 11th, we were told by the president and his administration and other elected officials from both sides of the aisle that our so-called American way of life was under attack from so-called evildoers who, quote, hate our freedom, end quote. I was fairly young then, still in high school. I enlisted in the Army between September 11th and the start of the Iraq War and shipped off to basic training. Not long after it all began, like all of my fellow service members and vets here, I took an oath that explicitly read that I would defend the Constitution and implicitly stated that I was willing to give my life to do so. The point of this boring autobiography is this. Our American way of life includes concepts of freedom from tyranny and a certain American personal independence that has been passed down through many generations of this nation. If we are to believe that torturing human beings made us safe, that denying habeas corpus has made us more secure, that warrantless wiretapping impeded the evildoers, then what did I and we volunteer to lay our lives down for? In short, if we violate the very ideals that hold together our American way of life and the pursuit of security, what exactly are we secure from? What does that tell us about the success of the so-called evildoers in attempting to, quote, destroy our American way of life, end quote? Richard Smith, Vote Vets.
It's so Orwellian.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, when you ask young people to protect and defend the essential part of our country, the Constitution, without that, we are not the United States of America. You ask them to defend that. And the implication is, in doing so, they may have to die. And then the civilian sons of bitches back here in the United States deliberately prostitute and pervert that Constitution that they have sent tens of thousands of young Americans out to ostensibly defend? Who is sticking it to whom here? George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and every son of a bitch who engineered this is, by definition, established by us a war criminal. Why are they not being prosecuted? All right, some phone calls here. Ed is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina, listening on Sirius. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Mike. Mike. I love your show. I called you a couple times now over the last 2 years.
Yes, sir.
I drive a truck, and the offer still stands. If you ever get stuck out here on the road somewhere, I'll be glad to take you where I'm going to go.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Ed.
Well, I served in the military. I joined in 93 and was a reservist under Clinton in the Marines. And, it's such a weird thing. I've learned so much about it, about the whole military experience. And it's such a weird, you never get out of your head. I mean, I was out of there 10 years ago. My dad was in the Marines, 40 years ago.
Right.
It's just something that you never, I have nothing to do with the military anymore at all. And it's just something that you think about it every day.
Right.
And what you said about playing the video games and all that kind of thing, it's like the people in this country, their main emphasis is on being entertained.
Right.
You play these games, you shoot all these people, it's all fun and games. You watch TV, all you see is people blowing people up, and then when you grow up and you turn 18, you get to join the military and you get your own Humvee and your own rifle and all this kind of thing. It's all just a big game. And you don't really understand, And I think the military, they have to keep it that way because I don't really think they can build their ranks, just showing pictures of, dead kids and stuff like that. I mean, it's a weird thing. I don't know how to feel about it anymore, I don't know, should I be proud of my service? Is it a shameful thing? Of course I love my country. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else.
Right.
So it's something that I think a lot of people I know wrestle with. I knew a guy that, served, and a great guy. He was an officer, and he went to Sarajevo, 20 years ago or something like that.
Right.
And his job was to lead these guys, and he sent them off, and none of them came back. And the guy drank himself to sleep every night, and cried and stuff like that. It's like, that ain't no fun, it's not a game.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know how the military continues to get more people to enlist and all that, except for with all this propaganda and everything they spit out there. And they should just, I really feel like they need to eliminate the BS. Really just have look, you're going to pick up a rifle, and this is what you're going to do, and this is why you're going to do it, and you might die. And, I was going to follow that whole situation, which I haven't heard about, the lady whose son died, and she was down there outside of Bush's ranch, camped out.
Yeah, Cindy Sheehan.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about her in a while. Out of the picture? Or?
I think she is attempting once again to... hold on a second.
That might be me.
No, I think it's here. Can you hear me okay now?
Oh, yeah, I hear you fine.
She's attempting, I think, once again to run for Congress. So Cindy Sheehan's still around. Well, listen, Ed, I appreciate what you're talking about. It is something I'm sure that every veteran has to struggle with. Let me put you on hold and talk like this for a second, because we're getting a lot of static from your call. If this country were attacked, let's be real here, because the military, as you point out, Ed, can't afford in any way, shape, or form to be real. It's all fantasy. And it plays on the high testosterone levels of young men. If the military were honest, there would be no, the people that put together recruitment videos and so on and so forth, nobody would join. If you get some 17 or 18-year-old into your office and show him videos of bombed cities and villages and headless corpses and blood and gore, and show him American soldiers at Landstuhl in Germany, or at different hospitals where half their heads had been blown off and arms and legs missing, nobody would join. And that would probably be a good thing, because we have not been attacked by a state-sponsored military since 1941. The terrorists, if the story is true, that came here and bombed the trade towers and part of the Pentagon, if we want to believe that story, perpetrated against the United States, a kind of act that cannot be defended against. It simply can't, unless we want to militarize our borders completely, entirely, all the way around, every airport, every train station, every port. The one way to fight against that kind of terrorism is not to commit provocative acts 10,000 miles away that inspire people to go crazy enough to respond that way. So if this country were attacked, I don't have any doubt in my mind that every able-bodied man and woman in this country would rise to the defense. But what is the military being used for now? What has it been used for since the end of World War II? And that's the problem. If the military machine were ever honest, there would be no standing army, which is what the framers of the Constitution wanted. No standing army. Thanks, Ed.
On this endless killing spree, how many kids can you kill and send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? Whatever happened to your resolve?
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
Twenty-one past the hour. You know, I've got to take a quick little break here from the dialogue. We had a new advertiser join us not too long ago, a few days ago, and I have not welcomed this company, and I want to do it because you know what we're doing with the Malloy program here. We are totally independent, and the companies that do advertise with us are real. They're throwing us a lifeline. So in addition to those of you who subscribe to the podcast. But you may have heard the commercial in that last spot set, as they call it, and that's engravetoday.com. The woman who runs that company sent us, before we started running her commercials, she sent us something that she did with a picture of Molly that she took off the our webpage. It was just amazing. So, again, my bad for not mentioning how much we are grateful for this company, EngraveToday.com. And if you are in the market for something like that, check out their website. Whether you're in the market or not, you may find some stuff there that make you go, oh, I didn't realize I was in the market for this. And if you do go to the website, let them know that you came as a result of the commercial that they are running on this program. This is critical. Critical to the success of this program. When we get advertisers like this who, you know, sign on for as long as they're, you know, the contract that they work out with. But check it out, if you would, engravetoday.com. It's a fine little company, and you may, and you know, this is not part of their commercial. I'm just saying this because we're just so damn grateful when we get companies that decide to support what we're doing. So check them out. Will you do that? EngraveToday.com. Just check them out. Just take a look. Just take a look. Where are we? Mark is calling from Lancaster, PA. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I had some, I guess you'd say, minor disagreements on the duty on our country thing. I'm currently in the National Guard. I don't think you can really separate any of them or the service for the country. I mean, sure, there's some, I'm not standing up for Bush or Cheney or Rumsfeld or anyone else up top.
All right, well, let me ask you a question, Mark.
Sure.
How is, military service. Now, National Guard, you say you're in National Guard.
Yep.
Okay, well, as far as I'm concerned, the National Guard is a whole different creature than regular Army. I realize that the National Guard since Vietnam, oh, since World War II, has been forced to not be National Guard and go into theater combat different places around the planet. I understand that. But the original concept of the National Guard, if I understand that correctly, is what it says. It is a guard for the homeland. But let me ask you this question. When we talk about duty, honor, country, or honor, duty, country, in what way is the United States military, and I'm not challenging you here, I just want to hear what you have to say, in what way is the military, under its current leadership, and especially the past 8 years, in what way is it serving the country?
Well, I think pretty much the war, the initial invasion, WMDs, I think we can all agree was a lie, or others will argue conspiracy, what have you. But the point is that when we went in there, toppled the Saddam government, we had a country in shambles. So young people in the military, they do what they have to do to put things back together or to fight the war on terror. Al-Zawahiri, who could be number one in Al-Qaeda, certainly number two, he said that Iraq is the number one place to fight, strictly because we were there, certainly. And he wouldn't be fighting us there if we weren't there. But the point is we're there. We're fighting terrorism there now.
Okay, Mark, wait, Mark, 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 I guess Mark can't hear me, so I'm going to have to put him on hold. Is there any way you can adjust the sound? All right, Mark, I had to put you on hold. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. You were going on and on and on there. The point that you are making is so susceptible to being just having the hell kicked out of it. If you say that the invasion of Iraq was, these are not your exact words, but what you were alluding to was the fact that the invasion of Iraq was illegal. Do you not understand that that's a war crime?
No,
hold on a second.
I'm not saying it's illegal, though.
No, okay, well, by any definition, there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq until we invaded. The whole world, including our own intelligence apparatus, understands this now. We caused it. It is illegal. It is against the Geneva Conventions. It is against the law to invade a country for no reason. We set that law at the Nuremberg war trials, and as a result of that, we hanged people. We sent them to their deaths. Now, I'm going to put you on hold because I want to continue this discussion with you, Mark. What I hear coming from you, and this is not meant to offend you, but what I hear coming from you is what you are supposed to think. We'll be back in a minute.
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Mark, who is says he's active duty National Guard. He's called in from Lancaster, PA. All right, let's go back to this and let's take this kind of a step at a time if we can, Mark. I asked you, or the reason you called, you heard me talking about duty, honor, country, regarding military service, and my point of view is that other than the duty, the other two really don't exist at this point. Let me ask you this. If you know that the invasion of Iraq was predicated on lies, and you also know that the action taken by the Bush administration constituted a war crime, then answer me this. Where is the honor in participating in the invasion and an occupation of another country that did nothing?
Well, Well, to say that the country did nothing towards America, I think is a bit.
Okay, what? Now let's take it. Let's take it. Hold on. Step at a time. What did they do to us?
Well, they threatened U.S. interests.
No, Mark, they did not.
Mark,
you gotta slow down. They never threatened us. As a matter of fact, Donald Rumsfeld, before he was the Secretary of Defense, there are pictures on the internet of his shaking hands with Saddam Hussein, because Donald Rumsfeld represented not just the government, but companies that were producing poison gases that Saddam Hussein was buying from us in order to use against the Kurds in northern Iraq. What did Iraq do to us, Mark?
To us in 2003, they didn't do anything to us. And
all right, let's back up. Let's back up. What has Iraq ever done to the United States that would provoke an invasion and occupation? What? Ever. Go back 1,000 years if you want to. What have they ever done to us?
Well, we have to understand, doing something directly to the United States isn't the only way to harm the United States. For example, us responding to Saddam's invasion of Kuwait was to protect the United States in the sense that it was protecting U.S. interests, because we assumed maybe he wouldn't stop.
Stop there, Mark. U.S. interests, protecting U.S. interests. What do you mean by that? Do you mean the oil fields?
Absolutely, in the case of...
Okay, so no, wait. Stop. So where is the honor in sending American young men and women to die to protect oil fields in another country? Tell me, where's that honor?
Well, to protect oil fields in another country is to protect U.S. interests. And to protect U.S. interests is to protect the country. Okay, let's say...
What? No, wait. Stop. What interests were being protected?
In 2003 or...
Ever.
Well, in the original invasion, the Gulf War back in, 89, 90.
What interests were being protected? The United States interests were being...
Theoretically...
Mark, wait, stop. Not theoretically. In the real world, what interests of the United States were being protected when we launched an invasion against Iraq?
Well, like I said before, in the Gulf War, U.S. interests were threatened.
Okay, Mark, you can't use the word I'm asking you to define in the definition. Let's try one more time. What U.S. interests were being protected when we invaded Iraq? You have to be specific. You know why? Because your life depends on it. What interests were being protected, U.S. interests, when we invaded Iraq?
In 1990, when we invaded Iraq, U.S. interests being protected was Saudi Arabia, one, in terms of oil, when I say Saudi Arabia. And number two, which I don't think is the primary reason, but it also did gain us popularity among the Middle Eastern countries, because other Middle Eastern countries feared the same thing we did, that they wouldn't stop the Kuwait. Now, in 2003, I don't think the same argument can be made there.
All right, Mark, you still haven't told me what interests were being protected, what American interests. You're telling me about Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Iraq. What we're leading up here to is American troops willing to kill to protect oil fields, American troops willing to turn the other way when children are being sodomized in order to establish false reasons for the invasion to begin with. Where is the honor, Mark?
Well, the honor from a civilian side is probably more poster boy and recruiting commercials, right?
Mark, where is the honor in what we've done in Iraq? Let me broaden it out a little bit. Just where is any honor in what we've done in Iraq?
Well, honor to who? honor to the people, honor to the terrorists.
Honor as you define it as a soldier.
Where... As a soldier, I define it as honor to your country. Country first. All right. I think that is the most important thing.
All right, does that mean then that you find honor, for example, in what the Germans did in World War II?
To them, it was very honorable.
No. To you, was that honorable?
To me, no. Because it's
all right. What did the Germans do? They invaded country after country. What have we done where it concerns Iraq? Did we not invade them?
Absolutely.
All right. Why did we invade them? You see, we're going round in circles here. Why did we invade Iraq?
Because you could say honor.
Okay. All right. Mark, I have to give up. And I wish you the best, pal. I hope you are not activated and sent into a combat zone. I wish you the best. I hope your service in the military is exactly what you want it to be. And I wish you everything in terms of safety. And if you do leave home, a safe return home. All right. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you checking in. Steven is calling from Burbank, California, listening on Sirius. Hey,
hello,
Steven.
Mike.
Hey.
I'm hearing an echo, but maybe I can live with it.
I'm sorry. We have an engineer coming in Saturday who hopefully will take care of this.
Okay. I can barely hear you, but I'll make the statement. Mark didn't sound like he was too far gone. I wouldn't make the statement like you can't reason with a sick mind, but, you know, there might be hope. You know, you never know that things come around. And what I'd like to say is I'm the commie pinko dupe that your mother warned you about, the godless commie pinko dupe.
Oh, no!
I am. I've been atheist for years. I've tried to rationalize it, but you had to have been there to have done it. You know, like, I don't know if you remember, I talked to you once before. I told you I read the Bible twice, and we talked about Tom Hartman and things like that. But what I got from it was, I'll go to people and I'll say, well, I hope you don't mind if I quote Scripture, but I'm an atheist.
Right.
I still quote Scripture, you know.
Sure.
But what the Bible is and what our religions are that I can name right offhand are... They are authoritarian. They take away your ability to reason. They mm-hmm. take away your ability to think. They take away your ability to rationalize in the real world and just hand you over.
Right.
In other words, it divides you against yourself. It robs you of your free will. And that's what religion does. I mean, when I was in Sunday school, they handed me a little pamphlet. Here's a picture of a guy. I was 7 years old, and here's a little pamphlet, a drawing of a guy. He has a sword in one hand and a chopped-off head in the other.
I think I saw that same picture.
Yeah. But we lived through it somehow, you know. We were all through history, you know, in Revelation, since it's been written, and even before it was written, there's always been an empire, there's always been the greedy, warmongering bullies going around and making life miserable for everybody else. And in 1978, I said this, the book of Revelation, there's only one country on the face of the earth that fills the bill of Babylon, the new Babylon. And that country is the United States. And I said this to other people who were enlightened and who knew things about things. This is, Dan, you're right. You know, where'd you get that stuff?
Yeah, well, listen, Stephen, you certainly get no argument from me, but I've got to move on because we're coming up on a commercial here and commercial break, I should say. And I want to get a couple more calls in. But Stephen, I hear what you're saying. And like I said, I don't disagree whatsoever. Religion kind of turns you inside out in pretty much the same way that the military does, in these times. Again, I'll say it again, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. If this country were attacked by a foreign army, I can't think of anyone. I don't care their age. I can't think of anyone who would not be willing to take up a weapon and try to defend, the real homeland. when we are sent 10,000 miles away to blow people up and torture and kill and murder and steal, we are not defending the homeland. We are not involved in those instances in duty, honor, country.
The fact is, in Afghanistan, more die than in New York, and most of them civilians. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. The king of death row, Texas, elected by his brother-in-law. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. Oil money, Enron, the American Empire!
When no one gives a damn about the future of children, just building a cash flow, making a bank account. Let us
10 before the hour. About, I don't understand. Thanks to, see, that wasn't so bad tonight, was it, huh? I'd start out the program by telling you it's going to be a trip into horror, and it only turns out to be half a trip into horror, right? Program was engineered tonight by Kathy Bay. Our technical advisor is Ben Birch. Military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy. Economic Affairs Correspondent is Bruce Enberg. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf are the program's ethical advisors. And the executive producer also is Kathy Bay. Matt is calling from East Jordan, Michigan, listening on XM. Hey, Matt.
Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
It's always amusing to hear imperial powers announce that somehow some country's threatening their interest or whatnot.
Yeah.
But what I called about a little bit earlier, you had mentioned you'd pose a rhetorical question, how does this country survive given its absurd policies?
Mm-hmm.
And along those lines, what caught my attention today was all day long during the station breaks, you're hearing William Geithner, or Tim Geithner, talking about the imminent doom of Social Security and Medicare. Now, given the track record of the Obama administration so far, I'm fearful that rather than raise revenue from other sources like cutting the military budget, for instance,
mm-hmm.
or raising taxes on the rich, they're going to propose, cutting benefits, which, of course, would be the supreme irony. But I wouldn't rule it out at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may be right, Matt. One of the best things that could happen to not just this country but the rest of the world would be to cut the military budget by about 90%. Because as it stands right now, about 80% of the money that we spend on the military industrial establishment is money thrown down a rat hole. Eisenhower warned against this half a century ago. So I certainly agree with you. I just wonder if we, the United States, will ever elect people who will have the courage to say we don't need this anymore. We still have 7,000 nukes. If somebody wants to attack the United States, they will instantly die. And then we get rid of spending what is approaching now, or if it's not already there, with the so-called black budget, $750 billion on weaponry. Thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate you checking in. Ramona is calling from Hammond, Indiana. Hey, Ramona.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Pretty good. I was calling regarding my son. He had PTSD. He is a 2-time vet in Iraq. We haven't talked to him in a couple of months.
Where is he?
He's back in Indiana. He's a couple of hours from here.
Uh-huh.
But Ashley and I, my granddaughter, his daughter, we haven't talked to him in a couple of months.
Yeah.
He's unemployed, and he said that recently he got sick, and he could not get treated at the VA. They told him that they could only treat conditions that he had while he was in the service.
And his PTSD doesn't qualify him?
It qualifies him for treatment, but like any other type of illness, he cannot be treated for it.
I see.
So So I thought that was interesting.
It is. By the way, slightly off topic, how is Ashley? For the people who don't know, Ashley is called this program. Didn't I read? I read something that Ashley wrote, right?
Yeah, I think so.
On this program months ago. But Ashley is the daughter of the young man you're talking about, right?
Yes, my son, yeah.
Right. And Ashley stays with you.
No, Ashley stays with her mom.
Her mom, that's right.
And my son's remarried.
How's Ashley doing?
She's doing okay. Yeah, she's doing okay. She's just upset with her father because she hasn't spoken to him.
Ashley is 14?
She'll be 13.
She'll be 13. September. Right. Okay. I think the first time I talked with her, she was 11
or? Yes, she was 10.
10.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
She's been on protests and,
yeah.
She's met Cindy Sheehan and.
Right.
Yeah. And we've done a lot of those things together and she's had things. Remember, she had something, coins. People threw coins
mm-hmm.
out the car window and hit her.
Right, that's right. I remember because she had the courage to stand and protest the occupation.
Right.
And what will happen to your son as far as you know at this point?
Well, he's unemployed. He's trying to find work. His wife is working. He's getting unemployment. But he said that it's tough to find a job. He's overqualified or he's too old. That's what they tell him.
Mm-hmm.
I told him to go through the VA and see if they can help him with job placement. He said he applied with them, but it takes a while.
What is his overall attitude where it concerns the PTSD? Does he manage it? Is he taking medication? I think you've told me all this before, but refresh me if you will.
Well, they put him on medication for it, but he said it made him feel violent.
Mm-hmm.
He had violent thoughts when he took it. He said he didn't like the way it made him, behave, so he stopped taking it.
Right.
So he's not taking anything. And he's not doing anything right now, but staying at home playing video games.
That's not good.
I know.
That's not good.
Like I say, we got worried about him. We got so worried we haven't heard from him in so long. That I had to call the police and have them do a check on him. And, and he called me because he thought something happened here.
Ramona, we have about 10 seconds. And do this for me. When you do talk to your son, and I hope it's soon, will you call back in? Not to broadcast any kind of personal conversation that you had with him, but just to let us know how he's doing and how you feel about what he's dealing with. Would you do that for me?
I'll sure do that. Thanks.
All right. And please tell Ashley we said hi.
I will do that.
Thanks, Ramona.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.